if at all possible. Let's pray together before we begin our study. Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Asher Kidshanu B'Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu La'asok B'Divrei Torah. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctifies us with your commandments and commands us to engross ourselves in the words of Torah. Amen. This morning we're going to be reading and studying about the rebellion of Korach. And I think when we come across such extreme situations in the scriptures, we sometimes wonder what lessons we can learn. But when you look at extreme situations, sometimes you can recognize some very basic principles. And we're going to look at the three wrongs of Korach, the three things that were fundamentally wrong in the way that he approached that led to such a disaster in his own life and in the lives of those who kept company with him. And we'll look at three rights that you can apply in your life to protect you from those disasters. So three wrongs that Korach had. He had the wrong motivation. He had self-seeking ambition. He had the wrong spirit. It was a spirit of rebellion, which the scriptures liken to witchcraft. And he had the wrong relationship to authority. He was against Moses and against the Lord. So wrong motivation, wrong spirit, wrong relationship to authority. Let's turn now to Numbers chapter 16. And we'll read together how this unfolds, starting in verse 1. Now Korach, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, so he was a Levite, with Datan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 princes or leaders, princes, what it says in the Hebrew, 250 princes of the community, of the congregation, representatives, men of renown. So these were people of real substance. Now, verse 3 gives us a real clue about what is going wrong. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron. Say that with me, against Moses and Aaron. And they said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves. For all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them." Now, in some ways, this sounds like what Jethro said to Moses. You know, Moses was a bit of a workaholic. You know, he could take a heavy workload and just keep going. He had perseverance, and he had to find his way. And when he started out at Mount Sinai, you remember that time? There was this long line of people that wanted to get to Moses to get counsel, to get help, to get some direction. And Jethro, his father-in-law, said, "Moses, you're taking too much on yourself." And it sounds like Korach and his guys are saying the same thing, but they're not. When Jethro said that, he was wanting Moses to be successful. And he was wanting the children of Israel to get what they needed. And so he gave direction and advice, counsel to Moses. And he said, "You're going to have to teach the people around you who are capable of sharing responsibility. You're going to have to teach them the ways of God and how God works. You're going to have to teach them their work and how to do it, and you're going to have to teach them the statutes and the commandments of God, and then you can share responsibility with many more people, and they can do everything that they can so that you can do what you must do." And Jethro said that because he wanted Moses to be successful. The sons of Korach and those with him are not of the same mindset. They're against Moses and Aaron. They're not looking for the success of Moses or Aaron. They want to get rid. They want to be in charge. And this is revealed in the last sentence in verse 3. "Why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" So they are challenging Moses and challenging Aaron, not because they want success for Moses and Aaron, but because they want to get rid of them. So when Moses heard it, verse 4, he fell on his face, and he spoke to Korach and all his company, and he said, "Tomorrow morning, the Lord will show who is his and who is holy. And he will cause him to come near to him. That one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. Do this. Take censers, Korach, and all your company. Put fire in them and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi. So Moses is not afraid of facing this confrontation. And he immediately is ready to deal with it. He understands that this is an act of rebellion, and it's one of a series of acts of rebellion that needs to be brought to a strong conclusion. This is not a normal situation. This is not an everyday situation. This is something, though, that threatens the existence, the future, and the mission of the people Israel. And so he says, we're going to put this to the test before God. We are going to let God reveal who he has appointed to be over the community. Moses understood that God had chosen him and called him, that he had not initiated it, he had not taken it upon himself, and so he was bold. I didn't volunteer for this, I was drafted. That's what Moses understood. He responded wholeheartedly. You know, you can be drafted and give yourself wholeheartedly to something. You can volunteer and give yourself wholeheartedly. Moses did not propose himself to take on this responsibility. God called him. But Moses had to assert this. And sometimes when you're in a position of leadership, you have to be able to assert, I am the leader. Moms and dads, you know this. There are times when your little kids will be defiant and they want to be the boss. And you have to know whether you're the boss or not. And whether you're the parent and they're the child, or whether you're just going to be buddies and let them boss you around or whatever. Moses had to know that God had called him, and he had to know that he had come into this position not by his might, not by his initiative. And then he had to trust God, that God would give a definitive resolution to this. Now, I want you to also notice that Moses calls Korach a son of Levi, which in fact was true of Moses too. Moses was a Levite. And Moses is basically saying, you know, we're family, and I'm treating you like family, but this is going to be tough. Because this was an act of rebellion. When the leaders of the American Revolution declared their independence from the king of England, they understood that they were engaging in an act of rebellion and revolution, but they understood that they were justified, and they knew that they were putting their lives on the line. They understood that they, if they lost the battle and if they were in the wrong position morally, then they would lose their lives, not just lose it in battle, but they would be judged as traitors and as rebels, and they would lose their lives. They understood that rebellion against authority, when you say that authority is illegitimate, it's not when you disagree with the authority or their decisions, but when you say they're illegitimate, that is an act of rebellion and revolution that puts a person in a position of risking their lives. Now, I'm not sure that Korach understood that. I think that they thought that they would just win the day. They had enough people against just two, Moses and Aaron? And they thought, oh, we've got 250 princes of Israel. We have enough with us to take control of the situation. But Moses doesn't engage in debate or in rational conflict. He engages in a spiritual challenge, because he understands this is a spiritual challenge. If you've ever been involved in conflict with family, you know it can be especially painful. Because family knows your dark secrets. Family knows you. They know you're good, you're bad, you're ugly stuff. They know what you were like when you were little. Now that you're old, you know, it's hard to keep secrets from your family. They just know you. And so when they start accusing, it's very, very painful. But Moses does not shy away from the need to resolve this. Verse 8, Moses says to Korach, "You hear me now, you sons of Levi. Is it a small thing to you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to serve them, and that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? And are you now seeking the priesthood also? You see, the priesthood was given to Aaron, also a son of Levi, but it was Aaron and his descendants who were called to be the high priests and to serve at the highest level of priesthood. The Levites were a priestly group, but they were in service to those who belonged to Aaron. And Moses says, don't you even appreciate what God has called you to? He's called you to come close to him. He's called you to be in service to the tabernacle and to do its work, and he's called you to serve the whole congregation. Isn't that enough for you? Aren't you content with that calling? Why is it that you want the priesthood too? Verse 11, therefore you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. Say that with me, against the Lord. And what is Aaron that you complain against him? You know, it's almost as if Moses is saying, I know you could have trouble with me, but why Aaron? Why are you picking on him? He's a nice guy. He hasn't done anything. But Moses understands this is not simply an interpersonal conflict between him and Korach. You know, it's not just a family conflict. This is not something that just takes a little face-to-face communication, let's talk things through and everything's going to work out. He understands this is an act of rebellion. It starts out and looks as if it's just against Moses and Aaron, but it turns out it's against the Lord. And we have to keep that in mind because Moses reminds them, even though they're relatives, he reminds them that God has been gracious to them and he's called them and he's basically giving them one opportunity, get your hearts right now. And if you do, then when we gather together, it could go okay. There's a moment of opportunity to turn away, but the sons, Korach and the company of Korach, they don't accept that moment. Moses points out that they're discontent with God. They want the priesthood also. They want what they were not given. They're not happy with what they're given. They're not appreciative of what they already have. And this helps us see that their motivation is a strong motivation of jealousy and envy. They want Aaron to not have his calling. They want to be in charge. They want Moses to not have his calling. Then verse 12, then Moses sent to Datan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, but they said, we will not come up. Is it a small thing that you brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness? And you should keep acting like a prince over us? You see, they're using some of Moses' own language back at him. He said, is it a small thing what God's given you and called you to? And now they say, well, is it a small thing that you brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey in order to kill us in the wilderness, that you should keep acting like a prince over us? You see, here's an echo from the phrasing in the beginning of chapter 16. These 250 men are princes, and they're challenging Moses for acting like he's a prince, like he's in charge. Yet Moses has been appointed to be in charge. He actually is the legitimate authority who is serving at God's initiative on behalf of the Lord and for the good of the whole community of Israel. And they're challenging him and saying to him, how dare you act like you're in charge? They're not in charge, he is in charge. And they're saying, you're illegitimate for acting like a prince. We're the real princes. Moreover, you've not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of all these men? We will not come up. You see something in this, that there's defiance, there's hostility being expressed. And not only these bad attitudes, but there's more that we have to take notice of, and it could easily be missed if you just skip over some of these details. I want to draw them to your attention. One, they did not appreciate where Moses was taking them. They said, you haven't brought us to a land flowing with milk and honey. Now, the fact is, that was the destination, but the journey would not be through a land flowing with milk and honey. They had to get there. And they're basically saying, we don't want to keep going in that direction. We don't like where you're taking us. The second thing is, they call Egypt the land flowing with milk and honey. Did you notice that? You took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Now, this connects us to last week's reading about the spies. Do you remember how the 10 spies came back with a bad report? They could not see things clearly. They couldn't understand the end result that God wanted to get them to. They saw things through fear. They saw things through defeat and through rebellion. They didn't understand that if they said yes to God, there'd be victory. They thought they could say yes to fear and get protected. But they gave a bad report about Israel. And in the same way, the company of Korach is giving a bad report about the land of Israel. They're saying, you know what is a land flowing with milk and honey? Egypt. That's where we came from. So Moses, here's your big plan. You take us out of a land flowing with milk and honey, you bring us into a wilderness, we've got nothing. And we've got no hope for a future. And so we're standing up to you. And what are you going to do? You're going to put all of our eyes out? We're not coming up. This also shows to us that they reject Moses' authority. They really hate that he keeps acting like a prince over them. As if he shouldn't. He's supposed to be in charge. And so he has to make decisions that people won't get along with. You know, every leader will make decisions that will not be unanimously accepted by people. I mean, for that matter, any two people in life will find disagreement will be part of their relationship. For that matter, any one person will find that they disagree with themselves. Have you ever been caught between two different opinions? And you know the famous saying about the Jewish people, where there are two Jews, there are three opinions. Anytime you have to face decisions, you will be torn. And you understand that this is part of normal life. So it's not possible that Moses could make decisions that everyone would just agree with. And anyone who has tried to lead a group of any size knows that you can't make all decisions, though you can make some that everyone will go with. But you can't make all decisions. And that part of leadership is just accepting the pain of that lonely situation where you have to go forward anyway, and you hope people will go and embrace, and you encourage people to embrace where you're going. But these guys are not approaching Moses as if he's got a challenge of leadership. They are challenging that he has authority, which means the right to act. They're saying, we should be an authority, not you. And they were moving in ambition and power, human power, but not authority. They didn't have authority. Moses grasped that, and that's why he put it to the test before the Lord. And he said, well, let's let the Lord settle this. And they demonstrated all of this by their defiance. We will not come up, which was an assertion of self-will. How many of you have had to raise two-year-olds? You know that every two-year-old has the potential to be a little Korach. And to say, we will not come up. This is a deadly combination. Rejecting God-given, God-appointed authority, and then defying them. It's not having conflict. This is not normal conflict. Korach and company didn't have the right motivation, they didn't have the right spirit, and they didn't have the right to act. Now let's look at three rights that can be useful for all of this, and we'll see how we can have the right motivation, We can have the right spirit, and we can honor those who have the right to act, and we can move responsibly where we have the authority and the right to act. So let's look at a couple of scriptures about the right motivation. James, Yaakov, in chapter 4, verse 3, speaks about why people don't receive what they ask for. And before that, he says, you don't receive because you don't even ask from God. But here he goes on and says, but even when you do ask, you don't get what you ask for because your motives are all wrong. And you want only what will give you pleasure. That's a very powerful assessment. God is not in the business of just giving answers to prayer for your sake and for simple pleasures of your own flesh, but he wants to accomplish something. He wants to do good. He wants to do what's right. What if you said yes to every request that your little children made of you? Have your children ever asked for anything unreasonable? Never. More broccoli, Mom. I insist on cauliflower tonight. When you are only motivated by what pleases you, it's the wrong motivation. And then 1 John chapter 3, verses 21 through 23. 1 John 3. Beloved, if our heart does not condemn us, then we have confidence toward God. And whatever we ask, we receive of him. Because we keep his commandments and we do those things that are pleasing in his sight. Very important conditions. Whatever we ask, we receive of him. That's what some people want. Well, I want to be able to pray and get what I pray for. But the key here, according to the apostolic teaching, is we learn to ask and we learn to receive as we are in obedience to God, keeping his commandments, and we're doing things that are pleasing in his sight. So it's not just a matter of having right doctrine, it's a matter of living a life that's pleasing to God and living in obedience to God. And then it goes on, and this is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Yeshua the Messiah, and love one another as he commanded us. Let's say, and love one another. And love one another. You see, it's not just a matter of having the right belief. That belief has to turn into trust, and that trust needs to reshape our relationships so that love is part of our relationship and part of our spiritual life. Spiritual life divorced from human relationship is false, and it will not give you the kind of life that Yeshua has opened up for you. That's why we need to be in obedience. We need to do what's pleasing in his sight. And ask yourself this question. Do you think that Korach and his company were primarily interested in pleasing God? Absolutely not. At first, they're against Moses and Aaron, but then it's clear they're also against God. Now, when you're against God, you're not thinking that what God has in mind is something good. You're mad at God. You're against him and his plans and his people, finding fault, and you want to lead people in a different direction, which is away from God. And ask this other question. Do you think that they had love towards Moses and Aaron? And were they letting that rule? Absolutely not. They did not demonstrate love. They didn't even demonstrate respect towards Moses and Aaron. Now, in 1 John chapter 5, just a couple of chapters ahead, verse 14, builds on these earlier ideas and says, this is the confidence that we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. If we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. That implies that we have to recognize, we have to discover, and then we have to move in the will of God. You can't just be asking everything that you want. You've got to spend time discovering the will of God. How do you do that? You abide in the Lord, and you abide in his word. Those are key things. If you abide in me, and if my word abides in you, Yeshua said, then ask whatever you want, and it will be done for you. Then. But if you just take your natural desires that have not come under the authority and redemptive power of God, and you start asking for every base human desire, God's not even going to listen. And parents, you know what this is like. There are times when your kids just come and it's blah, blah, blah. And you're not even listening. You tune them out and you just say, stop, stop. And sometimes you just let them go on, but you don't listen. How many of you can identify with that? You got a blah, blah, blah going. And you're not paying attention to the content, and the kid is saying, why, now, more, give me. I want. And you're just like, okay. I'm not listening. Selective perception. You tune it out and you just keep going. Well, the teaching here is if you ask anything according to God's will, he hears us. Well, some people say, well, what's the use in asking then? And there's a great use in asking because it's part of relationship. But what's required, what's foundational, is that we discover the will of God. And that's why the apostles are in agreement. We want to be God pleasers. We want to be in relationship with God. We want to learn his will. We want to do his will. And redemption means we're being purchased out of a slavery to sin so that we can be free to discover and then to move in the will of God. Now let's look at right spirit. Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 12, makes an interesting statement. It says, since you're eager for gifts of the Spirit, try to excel in those that build up the community of faith. Since you're eager for gifts of the Spirit, try to excel in those that build up the community of faith, the body, the congregation. It's good to be eager for gifts of the Spirit. So we can't find fault with a desire for more gifts and even a desire for more responsibility. We can't find fault with Korach for having that desire, but that's not really what's motivating him and his company. But to take that motivation and to elevate it correctly, Paul tells the Corinthians, try to get really good at building up other people. You see, gifts of the Spirit are not meant to bring you something. They're meant to bring other people something through you. And so the gifts of the Spirit are very otherly in their orientation. They are designed to help you give God's blessings to other people, to build them up. Now, that provides meaning and contentment and satisfaction, but sometimes people don't see it that way, and they feel like they own the gift, and they just want to use the gift. I've got the gift. I need to use it. Well, I've been in situations where I had the gift, and God said, I'm not using you. It's not necessary for God to use you everywhere you want to be used or how you want to be used, or even in the circumstances that you want to be used. You can still be useful to God if he gives you a smaller portion to operate in. That's what Moses understood. Korach, aren't you satisfied with what God has called you to? Why is it that you want more than what he's called you to, but you don't even do what he has called you to? You see, if you're ambitious, you've got to be faithful first. You get that? You will risk losing everything if you're unfaithful and you have great ambition. That's good, isn't it? We didn't get that last night. I didn't get that. But that's foundational. Now, look at Romans 14, verse 19. Let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and to mutual edification. Two goals, peace, mutual edification. Do you think that Korach and his company had peace in mind? Absolutely not. They were at war. They were threatening the legitimate authority of Moses and Aaron and thus the government of the community. So we have to have peace. To have a right spirit, we have to love shalom, to be a lover of peace. Not just wanting victory for ourselves, but wanting victory for the other side too. Mutual edification. Mutual edification means it's good for me and it's good for you. It's a win-win situation. Both sides benefit. Do you think that Korach and his buddies were looking for Moses and Aaron to win too? Did they want Moses and Aaron to come out on top? Absolutely not. That's what they were against. They wanted to remove Moses and Aaron from their position of leadership so that they could be the leaders. Very dangerous. And Paul understands these kinds of things. That's why he says, do everything that you possibly can that will lead to peace and mutual edification. And so he's not talking about just acquiescing and avoiding conflict, but to lead to peace. Sometimes you really have to get tough in order to get peace. And sometimes those in opposition have a plan that's not for mutual edification, it's only for their limited success. And if you allow them to be successful, everyone, including you, everyone else will suffer. And so you can't just acquiesce and you can't just give in. Now let's look at the third right, the right to act. Authority means you have the right to act. You have the right to make decisions and to carry out those decisions, and it means you bear responsibility. Back in Numbers chapter 16, verse 11, Moses says to Korach and company, therefore you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. Moses wasn't saying, because you disagree with me, you're against God. That's an oversimplification, and it's not representative of Moses' position. Moses understood you could act in disagreement, but in love and respect. There were times when Moses disagreed with God, and he interceded. There were times when Abraham disagreed with God and interceded. Disagreement is not rebellion. And having disagreement is just part of life. Moses is saying you're against the Lord for one reason. They were against the Lord. They were against God's plan. And Paul writes to Titus in chapter 2, Titus 2, verse 15, about a real challenge about authority. He says, encourage and rebuke with all authority. Do not let anyone despise you. That's tough. Do you know how hard it is when someone is intent on despising you to not let them get away with it? It's really tough. Not only that, but how do you do these two things? You encourage and you rebuke with all authority. Some people only want your encouragement if you're their leader, and if you have to rebuke them, they don't want to play anymore. It's time to sulk and go home, take their marbles and go home. Paul says, encourage and rebuke with all authority. You have that authority. And so there will be times when you need to encourage and times when you need to rebuke. Now here's the thing. When someone is already against you, do you know how unlikely it is that they're going to accept correction from you? Very unlikely. Only if they're already open to you and connecting with you, despite the disagreement, can they accept the correction. And so Paul is giving this apostolic advice to a young apostle, Titus, and saying, you're going to have to encourage and you're going to have to rebuke with all authority. Sometimes people will need to be rebuked and you have to be able to do that, and sometimes they'll need to be encouraged. You have to be able to do both, sometimes with the same person. But Moses knew this, that the correction that Korach needed would not likely be accepted coming from him. In fact, by the point that Korach engages in his confrontation, his rebellion, he's not ready to accept correction from anyone. Not even from the Lord, from the Holy Spirit, not from no one. And there are times when people get to that condition, maybe not so bad that the earth is going to open up and swallow them, but yes, to the point that no one can set them straight. And the worst thing in the world, I think, is to be left in that condition where God just washes his hands of you, and other people do too, and just say, well, you're on your own. I can't do anything. I've told you everything that I can, and you still won't do it. You're still headstrong and stuck in doing what you're willing to do. Don't let anyone despise you. Now I want to close by looking at three membership commitments that we have. When we're during our classes on membership, we go through eight commitments of our members, eight commitments that we expect of members, and I want to review three of them that connect to the theme of what we're talking about. This one says, pray for the synagogue, its leaders, and ministries. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that Korach and his company of princes were spending a lot of time in prayer? You know they weren't. They're not gathering together and saying, God help us, God help Moses. In fact, prayer of this humble sort can really help the synagogue and help all of us. That's why we ask our members, we expect our members to pray for the synagogue, its leaders, and its ministries. You know, we will not do everything the way you want, or even the way we want, or even the way everyone wants. It's impossible, and we need prayer. Everyone needs prayer. Everyone will do better if people are praying for them. There was a time in my life where I had, I was a young pastor, and I had widows who had on their hearts to pray for me. And a number of them were women who had Sandy had known when she was a little girl. And when we got married and we spent some time with them, they just had a heart for me. And they would pray for me. And there were times when I was in difficult situations, and I knew that I was going to make it through that situation because these women were praying for me. And I can tell you this, if you want to see this congregation grow, pray for the congregation. If you want to see your rabbi, your elders, your leaders do better, pray for us. If you want to see the ministries of our community thrive, pray for those ministries. Prayer will make a big difference. Now, the second commitment that's of the same sort is this, to maintain unity with synagogue leaders and members. To maintain it, to keep that unity going and not to allow it to be destroyed. And then the third thing is really based on the reality that it's tough to maintain unity when you disagree, but you can. And so the third commitment is this, resolve disagreements in peaceful, honorable ways, avoiding both gossip and sowing seeds of discord. Peaceful and honorable ways. Or how we want to approach disagreement, and we want to avoid gossip and sowing seeds of discord. Now, what's gossip? Gossip sometimes is telling things that aren't true about people. But sometimes gossip is when you do tell the truth about people. I remember hearing this great line in a movie, well, I'll stop telling the truth about you if you'll stop lying about me, one person said, trying to get their adversary to stop what they were doing. Avoiding gossip. Sometimes gossip takes place when you share something you know with someone who doesn't need to know and can't be helpful. They're not part of the solution, and you're just going to spread something negative. Now, I'll give an example from my own life that may help you. As a rabbi, I hear the best of things and the worst of things from people, both. And sometimes people come to me and they will share with me their greatest joys, the things maybe that they don't even tell other people, just wonderful things that have happened that are just exciting. And other times people will tell me horrible things. Once I came home from a counseling session, I said to Sandy, I thought I'd heard it all. And I haven't. And I just heard what I'd never heard before. And I'm going to my grave on this one, keeping it silent. I'm never telling anyone what I just heard. And I've kept that vow. Now imagine if someone comes to me and they share something, you know, that they're struggling with, and I just think, you know what, I think I'll tell a couple of my friends about this. Do you think that's fair? No. Do you think that's healthy? No. So that's gossip. When I take something I know that's true or even part of a truth and I share it with people who don't need to know and who, knowing, will think poorly of the one that I told about. So it's not only gossip when we tell things that are part truths or lies. It's gossip when we tell the wrong people certain things that are true. Now, there's another thing that we need to avoid, and that is sowing seeds of discord. When people are upset, they want other people to be upset with them, to agree. And I hear this, I'm sure you do too, when people say, well, it's not just me who thinks this. Lots of other people think this. If you're a supervisor, a manager, a director in a workplace, you probably get this sometimes. Someone comes and they give their opinion and they say, you know, a lot of people think the way I'm telling you. And they're possibly participating in seeds of discord. When someone is upset and their goal by sharing what's bothered is to spread their emotional condition to other people so that they also will be upset, what they're doing is they're sowing seeds of discord. These seeds will germinate under certain circumstances. And it may take a long time, or it may be quickly, but they'll germinate and they will cause other people to have discord too. And in the scriptures, gossip and sowing seeds of discord are likened to murder and to be treated as very dangerous sins that need to be dealt with strongly, not just casually. So we want to be a gossip-free, discord-free congregation. Does that mean we're all going to be like automatons? We're all going to be of one mind about every single thing and agree on everything? No, it doesn't mean that at all. That's an impossibility. It's not even desirable. We want different perspectives, different points of view. We want the contribution of many different kinds of people and kinds of thinking. However, we don't want gossip because it's lethal. It's lethal to the one who shares it, and it's harmful to the one who hears it. So when someone gossips to you, you know what the best thing to do? It's not to evaluate who's right and who's wrong. It's to recognize, oh, this is gossip. I need to stop it in its tracks. How do you do that? You say to the person, I think you've crossed the line and you're gossiping. You say, don't talk to me about that. You need to go to the person and work it out. Now, of course, people will say, well, I tried to work it out. Or they won't work it out with me. There's always more to the story than that. I had a situation when I was up in New York. Leader came to me. He was really upset with another leader in the congregation, really upset. And he began in a pretty passionate way to tell me how mad he was about what this other leader had done. And so I just got up out of my chair. We were in my office, and I went over to my phone, and I dialed the number, and I called the guy he was talking about. And I'll change the names, but it went something like this. Hey, Joe, Jim's here in the room with me. And I think that he's got something he needs to talk to you about and work through. So I'm going to put him on speakerphone right now so he can tell you what he just told me. And you know what? They worked it out. Was it awkward? Oh, yeah. For everybody, including me. But I thought, this has potential. And I can tell you this, that was the last time that guy came to me and did that. You see, if someone comes and says, you know, here's my issue with that person, I want them to go work it out with that person. And if need be, I'll go help them. But I understand sometimes you have to pray through things in order to work it out, and sometimes things take time. But I don't want them just spreading their discontent and their discord, because that is a lethal sin. And that's, in fact, what Korach had already done by the time he approached Moses. He had spread his discord to enough people that he, together with 250 princes and others, could come to Moses and have all the wrong motives, all the wrong spirit, and all the wrong relationship to authority. And it had to be dealt with in a serious way. So as we think about these things, let's really commit to pray for our synagogue, our leaders, and our ministries, to maintain unity with the leaders and the members in the congregation, and to resolve disagreements in peaceful and honorable ways, so that we can avoid gossip and sowing seeds of discord. If someone comes to you and they gossip, I expect you to deal with it. That's a good, healthy thing to do, and it'll make you strong. And of course, some of you right now are saying to yourself, yeah, but I don't have that kind of boldness. Well, let me tell you this, you need it. If you don't have it, recognize that you want it. And if you agree, oh, you know, I'm not that bold, then also agree, I need to get more bold. The scripture teaches us when people pray a lot, they get more bold. When people pray a lot and they get filled with the Holy Spirit, they become more bold, and they're bold to do what's good and pleasing to the Lord. And confronting gossip, confronting discord, this is really pleasing to the Lord. If you saw someone take a knife and attack a friend of yours, and you just stood passively by and said, you know, it's a real shame they're doing that. Well, the shame would be on you for not taking action, even if it puts yourself in harm's way to do it. It may mean that you have to confront a fearful situation. That's why you need God's Spirit for all situations. But He will help you.